SCP-9330, Hokma, Still Waters Run Deep. I've mentioned before how rough it would be to actually live in the SCP universe, regardless of your position. If you work for the Foundation, there's a good chance that any given day will involve some horrific monstrosity breaking loose and ripping you and your friends limb from limb. If you're a member of the general public, there's a good chance any given day will involve some horrific monstrosity breaking loose and ripping you and your friends limb from limb. There are no guarantees in that universe, and even though the Foundation often does their best to keep things under control, some anomalies just operate on a scale and level of complexity where the Foundation is caught scrambling to catch up, while the general public suffers. That brings us to SCP-9330, an anomaly that seems quite awful on the surface, and then only gets worse. Let's take a look. SCP-9330 is currently suspended in a lower maintenance subpassage, with a 500-meter zone established around the corridor and surrounding passageways. Hallways, shafts, and pipework connecting to the subpassage have been destroyed and sealed aside from the primary access route. Portions of the above-ground site that fall within the zone were considered lost, with retrieval of any documentation and personnel missing within the zone being ongoing. Bi-monthly, an authorized maintenance patrol will enter the zone to conduct necessary mechanical and structural maintenance. Equipment that has come into contact with the interior of the zone is to be scuttled afterwards. HMCL supervisors are encouraged to refer to an appended video file for an overview of conditions inside of the zone and general hazard mitigation practices. Curiously, the video log is not written in the usual third-person perspective, but instead is written from the second-person perspective. That means I get to read it verbatim. The acetylene torch smokes in your hand, spitting hatefully. Sparks sputter and die, drowned by the wet, clawed into splinters by the damp. Your neck itches, throbbing beneath the duct tape that seals your fume hood flush against your coveralls. Aching breaths hiss fitful and fast through the filter. It's always wet here, always soaking. Rotting plaster and rust. The muck that settles to the bottom of turbid, waist-high, tide-locked pools of scum. Oily and soft and sharp, with bits of broken stone and shell. The cold, from your balls to your chin, the cold. At the tips of your fingers when you make the ascent, feeling your gut writhe and boil. Sliding down the back of your neck when you pull off the undersuit in the showers, sticky and slick. Beneath your fingernails, between your toes. It gets in bed with you and wakes you in the morning. Your breath curdles in the morning mist like spoiled milk. Tomorrow you'll scrape muddy brown stains in streaking arcs across your dinky steel mirror and wipe your face until it bleeds. You've been told it does little for the stench. The Foundation is to maintain the continued circulation of fresh water in the Danube River Basin, located in Central and Eastern Europe, by any means necessary. In the event of cascading containment failure, the zone perimeter is to be expanded to a redacted area, adjusted for seasonal rainfall. It also mentions that a Foundation-wide recall and destruction of amnestics products has been implemented under Flag Wonderland Zero, which can't be great. SCP-9330 is the corpse of Vladimir Smutny, formerly a practicing amnesthesiologist employed at the site above this subpassage. It displays an advanced degree of decomposition consistent with long-term water exposure. Although the nature of the corpse renders precise observation difficult, no measurable progression in its state of decomposition has been observed since 2023. Samples of the corpse have proven resistant to conventional putrefactive agents and solvents. It continually extrudes a clear fluid from its orifices, extremities, and clothing at a rate of over half a liter per second, chemically identical to an unprocessed, redacted substance. Samples of the corpse's skin, muscle, cloth, and nylon also produce this fluid, even down to extremely small samples, albeit at a dramatically reduced rate of flow. Humans contacting or ingesting this fluid, who then subsequently come into significant physical or sensory contact with water, which is something humans tend to do from time to time, have a chance of undergoing a zodiac event. The chance ranges from 0.001% to a redacted double-digit number, depending on the severity of initial contact and dilution of the fluid. A zodiac event consists of spontaneous spatial displacement into an extra-dimensional space centered on the site's industrial reservoir. The mechanism for this displacement is unknown, and attempts to delay or negate the displacement utilizing external mechanisms have proven to be unilaterally unsuccessful. The interior of the extra-dimensional space presents as a large cavern system entirely filled with water, and to date, all attempts at comprehensive mapping of the space utilizing navigational data and topographic imagery collected by exploration teams have failed. While egress from the space is possible, its total area is unknown, and potentially infinite. We're given a couple of exploration log summaries of the space, starting with a D-class that imbibed 1 liter of the fluid at 96% concentration. That can't have been pleasant. They were equipped with a standard hazardous environment exclusion suit, an air supply, an autonomous barometric probe, and a Zank Stanford reality shunt harness. The harness is designed to transport the subject back to baseline reality upon either cessation of life functions or 30 minutes of subjective time elapsing. After consuming the liter, they were fully immersed in a nearby lake, at which point the zodiac event immediately commenced. They remanifested in baseline reality 10 seconds after conclusion of the zodiac event, due to the harness activating after their death. An autopsy concluded that the cause of death was massive deep tissue trauma due to extreme fluid pressure. The equipment was heavily damaged, and minimal data was salvaged. The second exploration test was performed by an MTF, equipped with deep ocean-hardened exploration chassis, and a Sofont-class autonomous deep-sea navigation vehicle, the SCPS Viola. After systems check, the group fully submerged in the site's industrial reservoir, and zodiac events commenced for all of them within 4 minutes. They remanifested 2 hours and 32 minutes later, due to the harnesses automatically activating. We're given another second-person perspective video log from the team, which reads, "Descend. Control confirms ready screen. Condition Delta green. Clear for ignite. Reactors burn coruscant bubbles into the midnight churn as the spin starts. The almighty cycle. The shuddering thrum that builds and boils and burns in your chest like a laugh. The mask interlocks seals over your face. Plastic packets inserted antiseptic beneath your ribcage flow blue with kinetic gel. Hyperoxygenated blood runs cherry lipstick red. Dive. The display floods crystalline. Your face is a wild mass of piping and metal and plastic tubes, and your breath is engine fumes scattered across obsidian water. Outside, the pressure builds, presses against carbon fiber and titanium, impossibly heavy. Chambers flush, counter flood. By the time your boots hit the silty ground, you've reached equilibrium. Drown. The squeeze happens in an instant. The optics flash white, sizzling. Silt gives way to nothing. The gyroscopic compass nestled in your chest ticks in a rhythmic syncope. Breathe. Breathe. Soothe your furnace heart. Breathe. Breathe as down the rabbit hole you go, spinning like a shot. Darkness upon darkness returns to the deep. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 headlamps flash into the abyssal black. Above, Viola shines like an orphan star. Radar sprints into the dim and sonar sings a sad soliloquy, call without response. The gyrocomp spins a gentle lie. Up, the machine ticks, is behind you. Downwards lies before. Egress behind, ingress below. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. The lonely lights sink into the night, tethers trailing behind like sundered bowels. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Ad Maiora. The water, you realize, is not clear. Flakes of milk-white film drift mercurially into the beam of your headlamp, casting shadow on shadow. There's already a slick layer of slimy deposit forming at the edge of your visor's exterior wipers. Periodically, Viola's active sonar thrums through the dim, a bassy tremble that shakes the condensed gunk from top to bottom as it vibrates through your suit and down into your bones. The depth meter spins in languid circles, and the barometer fritzes sublime. Nothing marks motion except for the steady, gentle sway of the tethers. Nothing marks direction except the gyrocomp's polite fictions. Nothing marks progress at all. There is only the black, the hiss of static on the ready line, and the gnawing churn in your bowels. Your body remembers descent. It's ground into your bones, the turgid pulse of your hyperoxygenated blood, the touch of feathers crawling up from your stomach and into your throat, an interminable itch at the apex of thought. We come into the world falling, screaming, and freezing. Most leave the same way. You fall for a long time. The sediment collected from the expedition primarily consists of a mixture of calcium carbonate, powdered shale, and decayed organic matter. Genetic evaluation is ongoing. A third expedition was sent in, consisting of one less MTF member, and this one was aborted 3 hours and 42 minutes after they went in, due to manual activation of the harnesses. That seems like an awfully long time to be in there. We get another flowery expedition log. Descend. Die. Drown. You feel it before Viola chimes warning into the corner of your eye, before Timmons barks a static report into the squad net on all hands, before your headlamps flicker on one by one as a circle of shivering candles. The cone of your headlamp fuzzes with marine snow, a blizzard of filth. The murky water swirls as one pale sediment dancing windwards. The dark writhes and pulls. There is a current. It wasn't there before. You stay silent as the squad confers, assenting or dissenting with spare twitches of the suit's digitigrade controls. The debate is perfunctory, an idiot dance. There's really only one way these things ever go. The gyrocomp spins another gentle lie. Up, the machine ticks, is against the current. Downwards is the pull. Egress behind, ingress below. Viola, that orphan star, flickers uneasily. Here the sediment coalesces into thick strata, filaments like galactic clouds drifting quiet through dead space. Your faceplate fogs the color of cobwebs and curdled milk, visibility gone to nil. The wiper squeaks along in steady futility. In the fishbowl refraction of your faceplate, you see the haggard guise of a familiar corpse. Egress behind, ingress below. When you were a boy, you sat on the hot earth beneath the temple at the center of your parents' hometown. Dark, stunted Shiwan clustered in stolid silence with wet timber stacked against their crumbling walls like the corded baskets bending the backs of the petitioners come all around to pray. The monks called out the sutra with foreheads pressed seamless against the floor, and as they rose with dust clinging to leather-wrapped bones, you fancied the movement of carrion beetles wriggling beneath skin, through dead chasms and eyeless caverns. Nothing looked back. Another vaporous fold elapses beneath your drifting boots, and then the debris is gone, your faceplate clear. You crane your head to follow the trail of your tether, up to where it disappears from the cone of your headlamp, up into the overhead plume, into the cloud of filth as it glimmers, glows, and then blazes with pale light. Viola descends from the murk, ethereal. The current is stronger here, purposeful. The squad hangs in place, thrusters straining, nothing on the net except ragged breathing. At once, all at once, you look down. The perfect dark stretches glass flat beneath your boots. It's like ink splashed into your eyes, so sudden the dissolution, so absolute again the abyss. Your fingers tighten in their gauntlets. You feel it before Viola chimes into your earpiece, before the sediment pours as a great river of rot downwards with incredible force, downwards and downwards into the black, rattling your tethers, subsuming Viola, roaring in a great plume down, down, down. You feel it before your turbines short, and the descent turns into a fall. You feel it before Timmons barks panic into the squad net, and one by one, the tin men are yanked back into the toy box. You are standing above a hole. We're shown an image reconstructed from Viola's onboard LiDAR array of what looks like a pretty massive hole in the ground. A fourth expedition was commenced, consisting of only three of the MTF now. One of them remanifested 33 seconds after initiation due to his harness automatically firing from cessation of life signs. The Viola remanifested 25 hours and 33 minutes later. The other two MTF members remain missing in action. We're given another log from Timmons, which reads, "You are standing at the edge of a hole. Rodriguez is beside you. Viola above. Reese is dead. The squeeze came while he was standing half submerged in the gray water off the dockside ramp, still going through the pre-mission checklist in that anal, droning way of his, calibrating hydraulics and triple-checking reactor readings, all buttoned up but for his helmet and gorget. Red mist in the water now. Slime oozes above your knees, the same rancid muck drifting above like invisible nebula, a spreading undersky the color of running pus. Periodically, great plumes of the stuff spiral down, caught in the same currents that bore your descent, swirling into the pit in a cloud 100 stories high. Exhalation, inhalation, breathe in time. And around, all around the edges, the dead come to prey. You thumb the emergency release. The tether drops away, red light blinking on your HUD. Rodriguez does the same. You move closer, closer, at the very precipice of the drop. Small rivulets of silt continuously erode, flowing into the deepest dark like waterfalls. There's really only one way these things ever go. One after the other, you step off the edge. You drift downwards, gaze held up to Viola's dimming embers. Your tether trails above, a severed umbilical. Rodriguez faces you, silhouette halo. His legs are crossed as he descends. His breathing on the squad net is steady. Even. You watch him raise his hands to his helmet interlock. You watch him twist. His headlamp vanishes. The squad net is silent. You fall for a long time. Corpses carpet the bottom of the world, so thick their entangled limbs hang over quiet waters like mangrove roots. From their eyes and mouths, dissolution seeps. The Karanodaka, the primordial undersea from which all rivers flow. They, the unnumbered. They, the transcendent. They, the sacrosanct dead. Hollow yourself, penitent. Digest well. Mouth the sutra from throats long empty. Reach gauntleted hands for the seal at the back of your helmet. Unclasp it. It is a black worm wriggling primeval beneath the skin of thought. Recalcitrance. It is a dream of falling. Remittance. It is a light in the hole at the floor of eternity. We're then shown another image from Viola's LiDAR array, with it noted that the cognitohazardous context has been removed. The image looks like a great coiled snake or eel. Long-term observation demonstrates that the range of actions potentially causative of the Zodiac events increases over time, according to an as-of-yet undefined model of semantic decay. It starts requiring full immersion into bodies of natural water, but a month or so later, it requires full immersion into any type of water, or only partial immersion in bodies of natural water. A couple months later, it requires only partial immersion in water, or close physical proximity with river currents. After that, physical proximity to any body of natural water, or auditory and visual contact with bodies of natural water. After that, auditory proximity to any running water, or exposure to rainfall. After that, drinking water, or proximity to stagnant water, or remembering snowfall, or dreaming a dream of spring. After that, it's unknown, but it's marked as being presumably irrelevant. Dilution of the fluid has proven successful at reducing the probability of Zodiac events, although not the true range of sensory triggers. Based on current estimates, minimum necessary dilution is a single digit of liters of fluid per a seven-digit number liters of water to reduce Zodiac event occurrence to tolerable rates within the general population. Meaning a very, very diluted solution of this fluid, and their tolerable rates are less than 1% probability over 50 years post-exposure. Strategic containment initiatives are primarily focused on damage mitigation. We're then left with a seemingly random image of a rainy parking lot in Slovakia. Alright, pretty wild stuff. This one is about amnestics, of course, those magical chemicals the Foundation routinely uses to wipe people's memories. They're a pretty crucial aspect of how the Foundation maintains secrecy, as otherwise they don't have a good way of dealing with the more public outbreaks of an anomaly. We're told during the containment procedures that the Foundation is working on destroying all of their amnestic products due to this anomaly, even though it doesn't really seem connected to this. Unfortunately, it is, because this anomaly is connected to SCP-3000, Anantashesha. The massive eel residing in the Bay of Bengal is the source of a compound called Y-909 that the Foundation discovered is incredibly useful for removing people's memories when processed. So useful, in fact, that they ended up utilizing it for all of their amnestic products. SCP-9330 is the corpse of an anesthesiologist, someone that works with amnestics, meaning that he worked with Y-909. How exactly he died and ended up as an anomaly is unknown, but now his corpse is producing a fluid identical to unprocessed Y-909. Like, a lot of it. Over half a liter per second, and the Foundation can't get rid of his corpse in any way. This chemical can cause people to be teleported to an extra-dimensional space, which, as far as we can tell, is inside of the eel, where they either pop instantly from the pressure, or if they're protected, lose all concept of their existence and are never heard from again. Normally, this wouldn't be that big of a concern, as the Foundation has a bunch of anomalies that produce chemicals infinitely, so they're not that unprepared for something like this. Unfortunately, the corpse is located within a sub-passage beneath a site, and at this point, the chemical has leaked into the surrounding ground, and it's practically impossible for them to contain. Even worse, it's seeping into the Danube River Basin, a massive basin with a total area of over 800,000 square kilometers that flows through 19 countries. Initially, the Foundation believed that the chemical would be so diluted here, especially if they keep pumping more clean water into the basin, that practically nobody would be affected. Unfortunately, while it's true that the percent chance of being affected is likely going to remain very slim for the public, they discovered that the trigger for one of these events in a person that has consumed even the tiniest amount of the fluid becomes dramatically lessened over time. What starts as requiring full-body immersion in a natural water source eventually becomes just being in the rain, or even thinking about a snowfall, or drinking water. That's what ended up happening to one of the MTF members, as they were standing in the water while preparing for the exploration without their helmet on. They suddenly got teleported, and their head exploded from the pressure. The amount of dilution to even get the public down to an acceptable rate of under 1% chance of being teleported into the eel after 50 years is 1 liter of the substance to hundreds of thousands of liters of water. I'll mention again that the corpse is producing over half a liter of the substance per second. In other words, the Foundation is screwed, Europe is screwed, and the eel is eating pretty good. It's definitely a fairly flowery article, with the exploration text being pretty unusual compared to a typical log, but I think it suits the theming of memories, existential dread, and the nature of the eel. It's an unnerving article on its own, but then when you piece together what it all means, you get to see the whole picture of how bad things are and are going to get. Even if the Foundation managed to get the corpse problem under control, no amnestics means that the veil of normalcy is going to be shattered at some point, especially with people randomly disappearing all over Europe. Obviously, eventually the chemical will spread across the world, through the oceans and rainfall, and someday you'll just be sitting there, enjoying a cool glass of water and thinking about last Christmas, when suddenly you're inside a massive eel and your head pops. I guess there's worse ways to go.